Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. These are the stories coming up on today's program. We look ahead to this week's visit to the Vatican by Aaron I, the Catholicus of Cilicia of the Armenian Church, and examine its significance. And we present episode 23 in our weekly radio drama entitled To the Ends of the Earth, based on the Acts of the Apostles and St. Paul's letters. This coming week sees an important ecumenical visit to the Vatican by Aaron I, the Catholicus of Cilicia of the Armenian Church. Aaron arrives in Rome on Sunday for a five-day visit and will meet Pope Benedict on Monday for an encounter that will include a pause for prayer in the Vatican's Redemptoris Mater Chapel. He will meet the Pope again during his Wednesday general audience. The Catholicus is scheduled to hold a series of meetings of leading Vatican officials and take part in a number of liturgical celebrations during his visit here. Aaron was elected as head of the Catholicosate of Cilicia, representing the Armenian diaspora, in 1995 and met the late Pope John Paul 2 years later. He is noted for his work in the field of ecumenism and served for a long time as moderator of the Central Committee of the World Council of Churches and is currently one of the four presidents of the Council of Middle East Churches. He is also involved in interreligious dialogue with a particular interest in relations between Christians and Muslims in the Middle East. Cardinal Walter Kasper is the head of the Pontifical Council for the Promotion of Christian Unity. He told my colleague Philippa Hitchin that Aram's trip to the Vatican and Rome cannot just be written off as a mere courtesy visit.
It's a courtesy visit, but it's much more than a courtesy visit. With the Armenians, we have long-standing relations. There were relations already in Middle Ages and the mutual influence already in Middle Ages, also in liturgy. And, nowadays we have very good relations with the Armenians, with the see of Echmiadzin, and with the see of Cilicia, where Aram I is a Catholicos and the Patriarch. So we are looking forward to this visit, because this visit implies also the whole situation in Lebanon, where the churches have to play a very important role, and Aram is also, in a certain sense, a political personality. And so I think also the whole situation in Lebanon will be important during this visit and, of course, as an improvement of our relations with the Armenian Church, which is very open in ecumenical relations. And Aram was also for a long time moderator in the World Council of Churches. And so he has standing in the whole ecumenical world, and I think it will be a fruitful dialogue.
The Catholicos is also renowned, isn't he, for his work in Christian-Muslim dialogue there in the Middle East?
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, it's a very important thing in Lebanon, because they have permanent problems with Syria, which is a majority Muslim, and Muslims are also very radical movements in the Lebanon. So the dialogue with him will also deal with these questions. He will have also a meeting with Cardinal Thorin, who is responsible for these questions within the Holy See.
We've seen tensions also flaring again recently, haven't we, in the Middle East, in Jerusalem, between Armenians and Greek Orthodox there, the worshippers at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. What role, perhaps, can Aram I play or his leadership in trying to avoid such episodes from happening again?
Well, these are very sad events at the Holy Sepulchre. Unfortunately, we are not involved any longer in such kind of things. But perhaps it's first the question of the churches which are present in the Holy Land to come to a solution, because it's a scandal if the Israeli police has to settle such conflicts. But of course we will speak also about this point, because it's a shame for all the Christianity if such conflicts happen in the Holy Sepulchre.
The Catholicos will also be honouring the memory of the many Armenian martyrs during Vespers at St. Bartholomew. This is a real open wound still, isn't it, for the Armenians, the massacre of so many faithful by the Ottoman Empire. What is the Holy See's official position on this?
Well, the Holy See's official position was expressed when Pope John Paul II made his visit in Armenia, and he visited the memorial of the victims of what is called a genocide. Even Turkish part does not recognize this term, but normally it's called in this way. And John Paul II, in a little bit complicated phrase, spoke also about genocide. In every case, the problem is not the term, it's the fact that thousands of Armenians were killed and starved, and it's a terrible memories are there, and we must help to overcome these memories and also to improve, if possible, the relations between Armenia and Turkey, which are neighboring states, but they have no relations with each other. And I do not know whether the Holy See can do anything in this regard, but of course we are always with the victims and not with those who did the bad things.
Cardinal Walter Kasper, speaking to my colleague Philippa Hitchin. Monsignor Joseph Kelekian is Armenian and the rector of the Pontifical Armenian College here in Rome, and he gave me his assessment of the significance of this visit by Aram I.
This visit is very important because a few months ago, the Catholicos of the all Armenians came to visit Pope Benedict, and now is the turn of the Cilician See to come and see the Holy Father, because there are two Catholicos in Armenian Apostolic Rite. One is for Armenia, and one is for the Armenian outside of Armenia.
Resident abroad.
So tell us something about the Armenian Apostolic Church. How many faithful does it have, and how scattered are they in different nations?
Now in Armenia, in the Republic of Armenia, we have almost 3 million people, and outside of Armenia there are 4 million people. All Armenians in the world are almost 7 million. And 90% of these Armenians are Armenian Apostolic Church. Only 9% is Catholic and 1% is Protestant.
And are there good relations between these different churches?
Very good relations everywhere, I think. I was in Lebanon and I was in France in my ministries, and in Lebanon and in France, we have very, very good relations between the clergy and between people also.
And how would you define relations between the Catholic Church and the Catholicate of Cilicia? Because there have been meetings before, haven't there, between the Pope and the Catholicos?
There have been many meetings. And they have signed an accord, yes.
Or an agreement.
Agreement together. And now we think it's the same faith for Armenians and the Catholic Church. It is only the difference of the leader of the church. For them, it's the Patriarch, the Catholicos, and not the Pope.
That was Monsignor Joseph Kalakian, rector of the Pontifical Armenian College. We now have episode 23 in our weekly radio drama entitled To the Ends of the Earth, based on the Acts of the Apostles and St. Paul's letters, that's been aired to coincide with the current Pauline year. The play is written and presented by Jill Bevilacqua and produced by Sean Patrick Lovett. The last episode told of Paul's trial before the Roman governor Felix and his successor Festus, who believed Paul innocent but was obliged to send him to Rome after Paul had appealed to Caesar. Today you will hear of Paul's voyage to Rome, of the storm and shipwreck which brings him and the company to the island of Malta, and eventually to Rome.
And so it was that when it had been decided he should sail for Italy, Paul and some other prisoners were handed over to a centurion called Julius of the Augustan cohort. They boarded a vessel from Adramyttium, bound for ports on the Asiatic coast, and put to sea. They had Aristarchus with them, a Macedonian of Thessalonica. Next day they put in at Sidon, and Julius was considerate enough to allow Paul to go to his friends and to be looked after.
And so my mother just took all the idols we had in the house and smashed them into bits, didn't she, Paul?
She did indeed, Aristarchus. What a woman. What a Christian. I don't know what we'd have done without her that time, Silvanus and I. When that mob descended on Jason's place, you weren't with us in Thessalonica, were you, Luke?
No, I was still in Philippi.
But there was young Timothy, remember? Mm. And you left him with me then. Mother used to try out all her new recipes on him. He had such an appetite.
Dear Timothy. Always worrying about me, isn't he, Luke?
He's devoted to you, Paul. He hated saying goodbye. Where is he now? Did you really send him to Ephesus?
Yes, it was better that way. He can do so much good there.
He was terrified you were going to be murdered by the Jews. And that last time in the temple, well, I wasn't there. I was staying with John and the Lord's mother. Oh, such an experience. Such an honour. She told me...
All aboard for Myra!
Oh, they're calling us. We must go. Come, Paul. Give me a hand. And there's the ship's boy come to look for us. All right, we're coming.
Thanks, Aristarchus. My old bones are beginning to rebel at all these constant departures. And so, Luke, you were saying, the Blessed Mother...
It's hard to put it into words, Paul. I've been making notes, though.
From Sidon, they put to sea again. But as the winds were against them, they sailed under the lee of Cyprus, then across the open sea off Cilicia and Pamphylia, taking a fortnight to reach Myra in Lycia. There the centurion found an Alexandrian ship leaving for Italy and put them aboard. For some days they made little headway and had difficulty in making Cnidus. The wind would not allow them to touch there, so they sailed under the lee of Crete off Cape Salmone and struggled under the coast until they came to a place called Fair Havens, near the town of Lasea.
I don't like it. Weather's too far gone. Look how long it took us to get to Cnidus, and then we couldn't even drop anchor.
We're lucky to have gotten here.
Yeah, and if you ask me, we should stay put. Never known any good to come off of putting to sea so long after the great fast. Oh, look, Captain's arrived.
And he's got that centurion with him.
Yeah, well, that means business. Let's hang around.
Yeah, no the worst.
And how much long do you think it'll be?
Oh, before the wind changes. Oh, not long now.
Day or two, I should say. Then we'll make for Phoenix. It's a better harbor than this. For wintering, I mean.
I wonder what that Paul fellow thinks. He's been at sea a lot.
Who, your Roman prisoner?
Roman citizen, to be exact. Yeah, I'll get him to join us. He's probably praying with the other prisoners.
As you please. Though I can't think what he can teach a sailor. Go ahead, though. You're in charge of this expedition.
I'll be right back, Captain. Have another rum on me.
Landlubbers. A whole lot of them. A grain ship full of soldiers and political prisoners.
A great deal of time had been lost, and navigation was already hazardous, since it was now well after the time of the fast. So Paul gave them a warning.
Friends, I can see this voyage will be dangerous.
Oh, no.
Yes, dangerous, and that we run the risk of losing not only the cargo and the ship, but also our lives as well.
Oh. You don't know what you're talking about. Have you ever sailed an Alexandrian corn ship? They're the finest vessels on the sea today.
Captain!
The wind's changed!
The south wind!
But the Centurion took more notice of the captain and the ship's owner than of what Paul had said. And since the harbour was unsuitable for wintering, the majority were for putting out from there in the hope of wintering at Phoenix, a harbour in Crete, facing southwest and northwest. A southerly breeze sprang up, and thinking their objective as good as reached, they weighed anchor and began to sail past Crete, close inshore. But it was not long before a hurricane, the northeaster as they call it, burst on them from across the island. The ship was caught and could not be turned head on to the wind, so they had to give way to it and let themselves be driven. They ran under the lee of a small island called Cauda, and managed with some difficulty to bring the ship's boat under control. They hoisted it aboard, and with the help of tackle, bound cables round the ship.
It's an island! What are they trying to do, Captain?
We're frapping her! Look! See how the cables have passed under a hull? And then we tighten them with a windlass. It's just a precaution. Saves the strain on our timbers.
Then, afraid of running aground on the Syrtis banks, they floated out the sea anchor and so let themselves drift.
But we're drifting!
That's it, soldier. Only way. Or we'll be blown onto Syrtis. Sandbanks. Quicksands. Understand?
No ship can escape them once she's on them. That's why we strake sail.
Lower the gear, that's it.
All hands on deck! Collect your prisoners, Centurion. We need every man's assistance.
All hands on deck!
And as they were making very heavy weather of it, the next day they began to jettison the cargo, and the third day they threw the ship's gear overboard with their own hands. For a number of days, both the sun and the stars were invisible, and the storm raged unabated, until at last they gave up all hope of surviving. Then, when they had been without food for a long time, Paul stood up among the men and spoke.
Friends, if you had listened to me and not put out from Crete, you would have spared yourselves all this damage and loss. But now I ask you not to give way to despair. There will be no loss of life at all, only of the ship.
What does he mean?
How does he know?
Who are you? How can you tell?
Don't listen to him, he's raving.
No, none will be lost, I tell you, none will be lost. Last night, there was standing beside me an angel of the God to whom I belong and whom I serve.
Oh. Who is he? What God is this?
Shh, listen!
And the angel said to me, "Do not be afraid, Paul.
You are destined to appear before Caesar, and for this reason, God grants you the safety of all who are sailing with you. So take courage, friends. I trust in God that things will turn out just as I was told. But we are to be stranded on some island.
Hey, just supposing he's right.
What do you mean?
Well, if we do get near an island, I think we should, you know...
I got you, yeah. Let them all sink.
Shh, mum's the word. Captain's coming.
Here, you two. What are you doing idling when the ship's in danger? You, take up your post in the bow. Keep your eyes open for land.
Aye, sir.
And you, come along with me astern. You must be ready to take soundings of the water shallows.
On the 14th night, they were being driven one way and another across the Sea of Adria, that sea between Greece, Italy, and Africa, when about midnight, the crew sensed that land of some sort was near.
I can hear something. Can't you?
Breakers. Captain, listen. Do you hear that?
Yes. Get the lid, quick. Call the mate.
They took soundings and found 20 fathoms. After a short interval, they sounded again and found 15 fathoms. Then, afraid that they might run aground somewhere on a reef, they dropped 4 anchors from the stern and prayed for daylight.
Hey, now's our chance. It'll be light soon.
Right, call the others.
What's going on?
We're laying anchors.
When some of the crew tried to escape from the ship and lower the ship's boat into the sea as though to lay out anchors from the bows, Paul spoke to the centurion and his men.
Unless those men stay on board, you cannot hope to be saved.
Here, you! Move away from that boat there! Men, cut the ropes! Set the boat adrift! No one's to try and escape!
So the soldiers cut the boat's ropes and let it drop away. Now they had all been without food for a long time, and just before daybreak, Paul urged them all to have something to eat.
For 14 days, you have been in suspense, going hungry and eating nothing. Let me persuade you to have something to eat. Your safety is not in doubt. Not a hair of your heads will be lost.
With these words, he took some bread, gave thanks to God in front of them all, broke it, and began to eat. Then they all plucked up courage and took something to eat themselves. There were 276 souls on board that ship. When they had eaten what they wanted, they lightened the ship by throwing the corn overboard into the sea. When day came, they did not recognize the land, but they could make out a kind of bay with a beach. They planned to run the ship aground on this if they could. They slipped the anchors and left them to the sea, and at the same time loosened the lashings of the rudders. Then, hoisting the foresail to the wind, they headed for the beach. But the cross currents carried them into a shoal, and the vessel ran aground. The bows were wedged in and stuck fast, while the stern began to break up with the pounding of the waves. The soldiers planned to kill the prisoners for fear that any should swim off and escape. But the centurion was determined to bring Paul safely through and would not let them do what they intended. He gave orders that those who could swim should jump overboard first and so get ashore, and the rest follow either on planks or on pieces of wreckage. In this way, all came safe and sound to land. Once they had come safely through, they discovered that the island was called Malta. The inhabitants treated them with unusual kindness. They made them all welcome and lit a huge fire because it had started to rain and the weather was cold. Paul had collected a bundle of sticks and was putting them on the fire when a viper, brought out by the heat, attached itself to his hand. When the natives saw the creature hanging from his hand, they said to one another,
"A viper!
Oh, it's on his hand!
He must be a murderer, that man.
He may have escaped the sea, but mark my word, divine vengeance will not let him live.
Oh, I want to see what happens.
Oh, no, I couldn't. Well, maybe I'll just wait a bit.
But Paul shook the creature off into the fire and came to no harm, although they were expecting him at any moment to swell up or drop dead on the spot. After they'd waited a long time without seeing anything out of the ordinary happen to him, they changed their minds and began to say he must be a god.
Well, I don't know what to say. The man must be.
Oh, he's no mortal man, I say. He's a god, that's what.
You think so?
Oh, I do. He's a charmed being.
You know what? I think we should tell the chief.
Why?
Well, he should know about these people and this man.
Yes, you're right. And anyway, they can't just stay here. Well, there are the caves, of course.
Oh, they die of cold. Some of them look that way already.
Oh, well, let's go and tell him right away.
In the neighborhood, there were estates belonging to the chief man of the island, the prefect, whose name was Publius. He received them and entertained them hospitably for 3 days. Now it so happened that Publius' father was in bed, suffering from feverish attacks and dysentery. Paul went in to see him, and after a prayer, he laid his hands on the man and healed him. When this happened, the other sick people on the island came as well and were cured. They presented many gifts to them, and when they sailed, they put on board whatever provisions they needed.
Down the hole! All prisoners, report at once!
All aboard, please!
And so, at the end of 3 months, they set sail in a ship that had wintered in the island. She came from Alexandria, and her figurehead was the twins. They put in at Syracuse and spent 3 days there. From there, they followed the coast up to Regium. After 1 day there, a south wind sprang up, and on the second day, they made Puteoli. There, they found some disciples and were much rewarded by staying a week with them. And so, they came to Rome.
You have been listening to episode 23 of our radio drama, To the Ends of the Earth. Taking part in this episode were John Gayford, Jack Gillen, David Horton, Anna Mazzotti, Adrian McCourt, Bob Mickens, Patrick Nicholson and Veronica Wells. The sound engineer was Tommaso Pallottino. The programme was written by Jill Bevilacqua and produced by Sean Patrick Lovett in the studios of Vatican Radio in Rome.
That's all from us here at the English programme for today, but we hope you have enjoyed listening to us. We'll be back on the air at the same time tomorrow, so be sure to join us then if you can. And don't forget, you can always find our programmes at the click of a mouse on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. Laudato Jesus Christus.